Welcome to the Super Gamer Podcast. Welcome to the new Super Gamer Podcast, episode 198. Our guest this week is a self-described manager, retail manager by day, game maker by night. We have Sophie Galley. Thank you for being here.
Hello. Thank you for having me. I didn't know I was 198. I feel so special.
Yes. And I say weekly, and normally it is weekly. It's been about a month since I put out an episode.
I totally understand. Don't worry. I'm in the same boat. This year is just out for everybody, I think.
Yeah, no kidding. But let's start with, I mentioned in the intro there, retail manager by day. Has your retail life influenced your game dev at all, or are they just totally separate worlds?
Oh, definitely. 100%. I mean, I do a lot of production work. So managing a team in retail is very similar in ways to managing a team, like a game dev team. Just making sure everybody's flowing right, people are moving along with their tasks to completion, if they need any support anywhere, all those things translate over from like retail managing to game dev. And I really hope more people see that too. I feel like there's a lot of stigma sometimes with retail as transferable skills, but there is a lot of transferable skills, especially when it comes to production work. And I mean, in a different way, like I've always wanted to make like almost a retail game in a sense. Maybe not my maybe this is not like the best way to answer this question, but I think it'd be really cool to have a game where you're just like helping customers find products. Maybe a bit niche, but I think it'd be kind of cool because there are like many different kinds of retail experiences depending on what kind of store you're going to. Sometimes they're very hands-on one-on-one, and sometimes they're very hands-off. I think the hands-on one-on-one would be kind of cool. Definitely.
So you do production, you also do narrative. You've been writing since middle school. When did you decide games writing was for you?
Oh man, yeah. It's funny because just getting into games period started at the pandemic actually. I mean, I've been playing games ever since I was a kid, but I guess when it kind of clicked in my brain that I could be doing it as a job was during the pandemic. Everyone was watching Among Us. I don't know if anyone knows like Ethan Nestor, Crank Gameplays. I love his stuff. He had a live stream of Among Us with someone who was on the narrative team at Santa Monica Studios. And she was talking about how like, I can't talk about much of my work because NDA and all that. And I was just listening and I was like, wait, like I could do that. Like I could work in games. Like that could be something I could do. And then I was like, you know what? It actually is going to be something I do. So that's kind of where it all came together. And narrative, as you said, like I've been doing it ever since I was in middle school, but I also studied it in college. And so, narrative is definitely at my heart, but production is also something that I love to do as I just want to support people getting to from their like ideated dream to like launched reality. I just want to get them there. So,
You mentioned how games have been a part of your life for, you know, so long. How did it feel when you were a kid and you finally beat the first boss in Jak and Daxter?
Oh my God. This is such a great question. I didn't know you'd find out about this. That's so crazy. That boss, oh my God, the first boss in Jak and Daxter, a fantastic game. Everyone should play it. I mean, I feel like they should remaster it. It's from it's a PlayStation 2 game. I didn't beat the boss a lot when I was a kid. I kept getting stuck there and dying. And it was this like, just like a Venus flytrap-esque kind of monster. And I just kept dying over and over. And then I think I was in high school and I was just really bored. I think it was like summer. And I was like, you know what? Like, let me bust out the old PS2 and like put Jak and Daxter in and like play it again because I haven't played it in so long. And I remember how difficult it was when I was a kid. And I was like, there's no way I'm going to beat this. Like, there's no way. Like, it was so difficult. But when I played it again, I beat it like the first try, and I was like, what? Huh? I thought this I remember this being so hard. Like, how did this come off so easy? But it just, like, you know, it's things like that where it makes you realize how much you've grown. And maybe it was, like, a little silly because it's like, you know, I guess my video game skills have grown since I was a child. So, shocker. But actually, it was, like, I don't know. It was just, like, a moment that I really was like, yeah, like, things that are more difficult when you're younger, even just like last week or last month, like you can accomplish them with time and practice and patience is a very big thing for me. Yeah, how did you find out about that?
You've written about it somewhere. I don't remember where I read it, but you wrote about it. Get to that boss and then. But you love the game so much, you'd get there, you couldn't beat it, and you just restart, and, like, you love doing that.
yeah. Oh, yes, I remember it now. I wrote a blog post about it, I believe, yes. I loved the beginning of the game so much that I was like, you know what? Like, as a kid, I was like, let's just play the beginning again, because the villagers are fun, the music is great, and the jungle you have to do to get to that boss is just, like, so well made that I was just like, you know what? Like, let's just do it again. Let's run it back. Why not?
Well, I have a very similar, I'm older than you, so for a Super Nintendo game, Battletoads and Battlemaniacs. And for years, my brother owned it, and I loved it. But the third level, if you don't include the bonus stage, is the Turbo Tunnel level. I don't know if you're familiar with Turbo Tunnel in Battletoads, famously very hard. And, like, yeah, it was exactly the same. The same part of the same level over and over and over for a good chunk of my childhood. And then, like, 20 years later, I played it and beat it right away. And I was like, right? I was kind of mad. It's like, wait a minute.
I know, right? You're like, there was so much frustration in my tiny body, and now it's like so easy. Be right.
That's funny.
That's so cool. I'm going to have to check that game out.
Oh, it's so good. And the music is so, the bonus level music is like one of my all time favorites.
Ooh, okay. I love that. Sometimes I just like listen to like OSTs of games I haven't even played. Like, just because the music's so good, I'm like, might as well just like listen to it, like, let's do it, why not?
Well, maybe we should. We were talking earlier before we started the actual show here how we both have taken journalism. We have a few things in common. One thing, this seems like a good segue, we both sing. What's the best video game songs to sing, do you think?
Ooh, oh my gosh, yes. Listened to the most recent podcast episode of yours and heard that you sang, and I was like, that's so cool. I'm glad we can also talk about this. I think, and this was, you told me that this was something we're going to be talking about a little bit, and I was like, ooh, what an interesting question. Because so many games don't really have, like, lyrics very often, but I'm a Kingdom Hearts girly at heart. So Simple and Clean by Hikaru Utada. Love that song. Oh my god, I could sing it every day, all the time, have it saved forever. I also was very lucky to go to a Sonic Symphony concert. Oh my god, so amazing. I'm a big Sonic fan. Undefeatable, their song from Sonic Frontiers, is also very good. Almost kind of like metal, like kind of screamo. Not usually my vibe, but I do love that song a lot. This might be a cheat too, like maybe this doesn't quite count, but I love Life is Strange. That's one of my favorite series. And in their first game, they had this song called Obstacles by Sid Matters. That song came out like way before Life is Strange did, but I heard it and I was like, oh my god, I love the song. So I love singing that as well. What kind of songs do you like singing from games?
As you said, there's not often, I mean, I guess there is more now, but like often the lyrics are like Latin or something. So yeah. I'm like, well, that's beyond me. One I would love to sing, but can't because I don't speak the language, is there's Terra's theme from FF6. There's something called the Prayer version, which was like on an album or something. I don't even remember. But it's like my all-time favorite gaming song. It's so good. And I have no idea what they're saying. So.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah, that just reminds me, too. This is, hold on, I have to go find it, because there's this one song. Yeah, Song of Ancients from Nier Replicant, I believe. I've never played the games, ever. That song is so fun. I love listening to it while I work. No idea what they're saying. Like, not in the slightest know what they're saying. But the vibes are just so good that I'm like, I have to listen and kind of... I try to attempt to sing along, but I'm like, I don't know what you guys are saying, but I'm vibing. We're chilling.
Right.
So I totally get it.
I've definitely, for the Prayer version, I've like tried to sing along, but like would never publicly because I'm like, that's probably, yeah. It would come across as racist and I'm not trying to be.
Exactly. You're like, I'm not trying to appropriate this. This is just, I vibe with the music really a lot.
Yeah. So, you mentioned the pandemic and how that's really when, you know, the game dev stuff kind of really got going. Your first game jam, 2022, right?
Yes.
Was that the first game you made? What did you make there?
Oh, no, it wasn't the first game I made. The first game I made was called Timber Limbo.
Yes, which I played.
Yes. Oh, you did?
I did.
Oh, what did you
And let
you
me
make?
Tell you, I did not help that rude rabbit.
You didn't like him?
Well, he was rude. I tried to play it. I purposely was like, what would I actually do in this situation?
Yeah.
I was like, I'm not helping this guy. Hey, I'm not a very good swimmer. Sorry for spoilers for people. But I was like, yeah, there's no way I would help this guy.
Aw. Well, that's okay. The point of it is very much like, what would you do just like as yourself as much as possible? But yeah, that was my first game. I made that in Twine. Like as you said before, I'm like very much a narrative person, and if anyone's out there who loves narrative, wants to make a game but has never done it before, Twine is such a great engine. The coding experience is very minimal. I am not a coder, like, in the slightest. I tried. I am not the best at it. But Twine is such a great engine to use. And Timber Limbo was actually, I was applying to a narrative internship at the time, and they wanted some samples, and they were like, oh yeah, like, you know, like short stories, anything like that, or like game excerpts. And I thought, I don't have a game yet. I should make one. So I made this game just for this narrative internship, which I didn't end up getting, but it really kickstarted kind of everything that's happened since then. So Timber Limbo is very close and dear to my heart. But the second game I made from the game jam in 2022, Recharge, was also Twine as well. And I made that with Anto Colin Marty, shout out, love Anto. We met through Code Coven, which if you guys don't know, an amazing like underrepresented developer, accelerator. I did a course with them on game making using Unity. That's where I learned that I am not a coder. Unity is fun, but hard. But they're amazing. Like, they're actually raising money right now to keep themselves going. So if anyone loves Code Coven or loves supporting free education for indie game developers, like, you should totally donate. They have a GoFundMe right now, and it's called Code Coven's Academy Fundraiser. But yeah, like, meeting Anto, and we were talking, and they're like, do you want to make a game together? And I was like, yeah, totally. So this game jam was the first time I did something in sort of a competition setting. What was great about this game jam is it's literally called my first game jam summer. So it's very much expecting everybody to be at the same level. So they provide a lot of resources. They're also super cool. And their theme that year was heal. And we were both feeling like we needed kind of like self-esteem healing. We were both people who were pivoting our job search to game development. So we created a narrative about a nurse who wanted to, whose true calling was like music therapy. But yeah, we used Twine to make that. And what's okay, love Twine, but when you're working with other people is difficult because source control, like Git and things like that, not really a thing when it comes to Twine. So you have to kind of like save the document, send to the other person, let them do it, and we kind of did it back and forth because we were both remote. Anto's in Puerto Rico and I'm in the US. And actually, during that time, I went on vacation outside of the U.S., so, like, near the end. So, yeah, it was a lot of back and forth, but it was, like, a really great first game jam experience. So, again, like, if anyone hasn't done a game jam before, my first game jam, they've got a Tumblr and everything, too. Good, great place to start.
I actually have a bone to pick with you as far as Recharge.
Oh, yes.
In it, this comes down to, again, me being older than you. In it, you describe a flip phone as ancient. And how dare you?
I'm so sorry. Look, I also I called it ancient. I had a flip phone too. So I'm also saying I'm also ancient as well. I know. Looking back, that probably doesn't make any sense because even the character themselves is older than myself, so they probably wouldn't consider it ancient. But comparative to what we have currently, kind of not quite where we're at now. But I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. It was just one of those. Right, I'm reading it and I was like, huh. I guess I am that old.
No, you're totally fine. Don't worry. I need to change the narrative now. Go back and change everything.
We'll continue with games you've made. I really enjoyed Space Hamlet. I think that's just such an awesome idea. I knew when it, because on your itch.io it said puzzle. I was like, oh, this is for me. And yeah, it's so much fun. I really recommend people check that out.
Yes, Space Hamlet. I love Space Hamlet with my heart and soul. Space Hamlet, it's a bummer because we did have a couple other levels set up and ready for that game, but I don't think we'll be returning to it, unfortunately. Similar vibe, though. I think we only have one other level we never got to. There was another character you were going to meet in everything. But yeah, puzzle game, I point and click, love those games, and puzzles are also my jam, and Space Hamlet was just so fun. Yes, everyone should try out Space Hamlet sometime if they'd like.
And before we get to the final game I'm going to bring up here, there's probably a bit of background we should do. You were a grantee of the 2023 IGDA Foundation's Virtual Exchange Program. Can you tell us what that is and you know, what it was like to be a part of that?
Yeah, definitely. So IGDA stands for International Game Developer Association, and then Foundation. So very long name. IGDA themselves and the IGDA Foundation are actually like related but separate entities. The IGDA Foundation is very much there for underrepresented game devs trying to either like upgrade their skills from within the industry into like leadership positions or break into the industry or just getting underrepresented groups into the industry as well. So there's like several different cohorts within the Virtual Exchange, which is a like program where you're set up with a mentor and you get a network of other game developers, those in the industry, students who are trying to or graduating and are trying to get into the industry as well, emerging from other industries into the game industry, things like that. And then you get access to like guest talks and sessions and things like that. It is like an amazing experience. I was very, very fortunate. My mentor was Abby Sherlock from Riot. She is amazing. She is like literally everywhere all at once, but does some amazing production work with them. And I was very fortunate to have her as my mentor. And during that time, I was in the Velocity cohort, which are people transitioning from one industry and trying to break into the games industry. So we're all in the same boat in that we're like working adults who are like in their spare time making games and like teaching ourselves about games, going to like organizations like the IGDA Foundation, Code Coven, to upgrade our education about game development, things like that. So we would talk to each other and support each other on our journeys. and when we finished the virtual exchange, we wanted to stay in contact. We wanted to like actually work on games together, because the virtual exchange itself is definitely like giving you access to this big network and having those sessions and guest speakers like in place, but it wasn't creating games together. It was more just like, we're all learning together, we can support each other, we can ask questions to each other, things like that. So we were all like, well, we want to make games together too, because like we just all grew so close over that time. And so we founded a passion fueled studio called Distance Over Time Studio, also known as DOTS. So we work on making games together that we can use for our portfolios. And yeah, that's where our most recent game, Guiding Light, comes into play. I'm assuming that's where your segue.
That is exactly where we're going.
Perfect.
Yes. Distance Over Time Studio. You made Guiding Light. One thing I'm really interested in, so you specifically made this with accessibility for blind players.
Yes.
And way back when, friend of the show, I interviewed Liam Irvin, who was blind, and he had mentioned building accessibility from the bottom floor, he said, is so important. Like, it's not something you can just tack on at the 11th hour. Mm-hmm. So, well, A, you know, why? Why was specifically, why were you like, we want to make this accessible to blind people? And like, how do you think having that in mind, like, how did that shape the game?
Yeah, well, I mean, a big part of it was that one member of our team, Ross Miner, is a blind professional, consultant, and content creator who's on our team. And all of the games we make at DOTS are all with what are the games that we want to see in the industry more. And so blind and low vision players are like not brought into the conversation enough when it comes to accessibility with games. So we were like, yeah, we want to have all our games be blind and low vision accessible. Ross is such an amazing person to be working with. I mean, he's worked with such big names in entertainment, and working with him over the course of Guiding Light and just outside of that game as well, he's just made me so much more aware of the things that we could be doing for accessibility in gaming, but also just in game development, period. At the very start, I was part of the production team for Guiding Light, and we were trying to make a scheduling system that would work with Ross's screen reader capabilities, and even that was very difficult to come by. And so it's things like that that make us want to create those games that just bring more inclusivity of the player base. There's just so many people that we could be reaching with games. And so, that's why we were like, this is what we want to do for all of the games that we make together.
You had a lot of hats for making Guiding Light, one of them being playtesting. Did you specifically, I mean, because you're making a game meant to be accessible for blind players, did you have to specifically seek out blind players?
Yeah, so we when we first started the playtesting stage, I created a Google form that was kind of just like, oh, like everyone on our team, we're all like, share this Google form with anyone. And we also had, obviously, the alumni of the IGDA Foundation, we reached out to them. But Ross, because he's a content creator, has a really big audience, he even went and went, here, like, we really want to have blind and low vision players to play test Guiding Light. So we, within the form, we had a question like, are you a blind or low vision player? Do you need screen reader accessibility? So that we could have that part of our demographic in the play testing. So yeah, so we totally did. And those playtesters were amazing. We loved working with them. We learned so much from our playtests. We had Ross playing the game as we were making the game, but it was even better to even just see. I feel like whenever you're making a game, when the game developers make it, you're always like, yeah, like when they're playing, they're like, yeah, this is it. Like, everything's solid. Like, we haven't missed anything. And then you pass it off to the playtesters and they find all these things. You're like, oh my God. Didn't even think you'd be able to get there or find that or so on and so forth. Yeah, especially having our blind and low vision playtesters was very pivotal to shaping up Guiding Light to being what we want it to be, which is a very spooky, explorative, blind accessible game that we all wanted it to be.
And you have recently submitted it to the 2024 Rookie Awards. Is that scary in any way? Like,
yes.
I mean, it's one of those, I was thinking about it and I was like, I mean, ultimately, like, you just submit it and that's it. But I guess there's got to be some feeling of like, are they going to like it?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. This is a big thing. I mean, Kelly Carino, who is part of our programming and technical arts area of our team, was like, you know what, like, this rookies competition I've submitted before and we should totally do it with Guiding Light because it's such a, what to Ross telling us, like, there's so little games that are like, we submitted it originally for a horror game jam. I wouldn't say Guiding Light is horror. Very, like, kind of spooky scary, but not like horror. But he told us there's not very many games that kind of that are blind accessible that delve into that area. And so Kelly was like, hey, like, we should totally submit this for the rookies, since it's so much different than many games out there. And yeah, it was a little scary. It's definitely like the biggest competition I've ever submitted to, and I think I could say a lot of the team are in the same boat. A lot of us were when we first started Dots, Guiding Light was people's first game, just period. Sometimes people's first game for a game jam. And then also just the first time working all together on a game. So it was a lot of firsts. There was a lot of learning there. But it was great, and patching it up and submitting it to this big competition was a little scary, but also really exciting because just looking at what everyone else is submitting, ours is so much different than most of the submissions out there. So it was very fun to finally, like, press submit, the submit button on it. And yeah, it's really cool. You guys, you should check it out if you haven't. Guiding Light on the Rookies page. It's still running as of current. So yeah, if you like it, you give us a high five if you have an account.
So after, you know, obviously I imagine this is what you're focused on right now, but when Rookies is over, is Dots, is Distance Over Time Studio, you sticking together, or you have anything in the pipeline?
Yeah, we're definitely, we're slowly talking about games. We're coming out soon. I think one thing that the team wants to do is even patch up the second game that was being worked on. I wasn't a part of this, but we also had a second game called In for the Lost, I unfortunately was very busy around that time, so I wasn't able to take part, but I think there is more that that team wants to work on, and I am available if they're, if they want some help with that too. But I think beyond that, I think we do want to make another game together soon. And since the patch is finally done and it's been submitted, and we'll see, fingers crossed, how the Rookies ends up, I think we'll probably be getting together soon to see if we can make a whole new game together.
Cool. Before we get fully off this topic, going back to the IGDA Foundation's virtual exchange program, you attended GDC 24, and I believe it was through that program, right?
Yeah, so actually the virtual exchange, or like when you first submitted for last year, you could apply for that and their GDC program. I applied to both, but I only actually got into the virtual exchange, so I actually wasn't part of it. For GDC, but they created an alumni Discord that I was a part of, and leading up to GDC, they were like, hey, we're having a raffle for alumni for free tickets to GDC, and this Discord is quite big, and I am notoriously unlucky, and I thought there's no way I'm gonna win this, but like, I'm gonna throw my name in there because I would love to go to GDC. And so then I did, I won one, and I was like, oh my God, amazing. So that got me a full access ticket to GDC. And so that was just another amazing opportunity from IGDA Foundation. And I thank them a lot for that. They're all amazing people. And it wasn't my first GDC. I actually went last year, but I didn't like go. I went to like kind of the free events around GDC at the time. So this year was kind of like my 1.5 visit to GDC. I was invited to some free events around GDC last year, and I was not at all prepared. But the amazing game devs I made really got me excited about getting into the industry. And it really prepped me for this GDC, like what to expect and what to have ready. And so I wanted to really come into this GDC a little differently than last year. So that was the mindset I went into to this year's GDC, which was super fun. I loved it.
And so with that mindset, you decided, I'm going to hand out hand sanitizer.
Yes. Yes.
Which it sounds like went over very well.
yeah, it was really cool. By the end of the week, there was people going like, wait, are you the hand sanitizer person? I was like, yes, I am. That is me. Which was like such a cool experience. But the idea behind that, in case people are like kind of confused about what we're talking about, is I actually went to GDC with like over 100 hand sanitizers, and that had my contact info on them, and I passed them out to every person I met while I was there. And this idea I cannot take full credit for. It also was inspiration from the alumni server of IGDA Foundation. There was people who were talking about like business cards and just like ways to stand out. And GC Lau, who is a dev from Probably Monsters, told us that they passed out emergency packets with their contact on them and got like really great responses. And I thought that's such a cool idea. But I obviously was like, I'm not going to copy that idea. Like, I want to do something similar, but a little different. And growing up, I had gone to a lot of like anime conventions. I'm an anime fan. I will say I'm not in the anime world as much as I want to be currently. I want to get back into anime again, but I haven't in a hot minute. But from going to those conventions, I was like, well, conference and convention are pretty close to each other in the terms of size and prep and things like that in some ways. And I remember when I would go to conventions that when I would bring hand sanitizer and I would pull it out for like, you know, food and whatever, people would always be like, oh, can I have some? And I was gonna be like, yeah, totally. And I thought, well, like everyone needs hand sanitizer for the conference, especially. From my GDC, like kind of research, A lot of people tend to get sick after the conference, and I thought, you know, like, having a hand sanitizer is not something that people typically think of for prep for a conference. So that was like a great idea to put my contact info on there. And since the retail I do work for sells hand sanitizers, it was kind of like the perfect storm. Like, it just kind of went together. And I was going to buy a ton of them, but my coworkers so graciously donated like a lot of them to me. And I've shout out to them. They said they were going to be listening to this. So,
oh, that's so nice.
Yes, I was telling them about this because I thought this is so cool. And they were like, oh, we'll definitely listen. So if you guys are listening, you're all amazing. And thank you again for donating them. A lot of people who would come to get our sanitizers would always be like, oh, I'm getting them for a wedding. I bought these little like sanitizer stickers that say like congratulations and like our names on them. And I was like, what a cool idea. And one of my coworkers was like, why don't you do that for your contact info? Like, just, you know, like, find someone who could make the stickers for you. And I was like, that's such a cool idea. So I made a little design on Canva, and I found an Etsy seller, and I was like, hey, like, could you make these in sanitizers this size? And they're like, totally. And they made them super fast, and they were perfect. And so, yeah, it was such a cool thing. A lot of people were like, this is such a smart idea. And I was like, thank you. My favorite thing was meeting people, cause I never knew how to like bring up the sanitizers, like how to give them out. Like, I don't want to be like shoving it in people's hands. Right. Like, here's a sanitizer for you. Especially since another thing to keep in mind is people have like allergies to certain scents and things like that. So I didn't want to like just shove them in people's hands if they can't take them for whatever reason. And so at first I was just kind of going like, do you want a hand sanitizer? And people would be like, what? Like, what do you mean? I'm like, do you want a sanitizer to keep forever that has my contact on it? And so the range of reactions was really fun too. But in the end, a lot of people were saying like, this is such an awesome idea and such a cool thing. And when I run into them again, they'd be like, oh my God, like, it's you. Like, I talked about your sanitizers, or I gave some sanitizer out and told them about you. And I was like, that's so cool. Like, I'm so glad that they're being used and that they're helpful. And I hope it reduced a little bit of sickness for people out and about at the conference. So yeah, the hand sanitizers were super fun. I love them. I got rid of all of them by like Thursday. They were heavy, I will say. I wasn't carrying all of them all the time. I was carrying like a bit of them at a time, but they were weighing on my shoulder for most of the week. So yeah, I hope people love them. I love them. I thought it was such a cool idea.
One thing I probably should have mentioned when we were talking about Guiding Light, because I think it kind of ties in as far as, yeah, the accessibility thing. One thing you've said you want more games to use is sound proximity as a games function. And as I understand that, for example, one of the new Call of Duties, and I'm really not a big Call of Duty player, but one of them, like, talking on mic, I think it's a setting you can turn on or off, but talking on mic, people, if you're like near other players in multiplayer, they can hear you. Yeah. And it kind of lets them, you know, oh, there's someone around here, which is a really cool function. Anyway, maybe you can tell us more about what you're talking about there.
Yeah. I mean, things like that. I know when Among Us was still new, people were modding it, so that sound proximity was a thing too, which gave like a whole other element to that game as well. But sound proximity can be both like voices, like those examples, but also just like sound proximity to like the walls, things like that. As we did a lot with Guiding Light, was that when you get close to walls, you can kind of, if you are a sighted player, you can see it but hear it. But for blind and low vision players, like, they're able to basically have a sense of where they are on in our game because of the sound proximity to the walls, which is something that our blind and low vision playtesters loved. And so I love the idea of having sound proximity be both like an accessibility feature, but also just like a game feature that can deepen like player experiences. Another like example too, and like one of my favorite games is Unheard: Voices of Crime. Very obscure game, but it's on Steam. It's so cool. You're basically trying to like solve a crime by going to different parts of a map, and you can hear, listen in on people's conversations throughout that day of the crime, and piece it together through that way. Yeah, so that's another example. You guys should check that game out. Super, super cool. But with Guiding Light again, like, we actually, part of the narrative was, it was supposed to explain the sound proximity that we eventually had to scrap due to time. But we originally had it that the souls of the afterlife were kind of directing you and leading you to each of the items you can find in the level. But yeah, audio is such like a pivotal part of gaming in like so many ways. And like, you, if you guys haven't seen it, like Ross, again, I will talk about Ross all day. He's amazing. But he was recently featured on Blizzard's mini document, mini documentary on accessibility for Diablo 4. That really shows how like sound and gaming is both like for immersion, but also can be like so great for accessibility. Yeah, I think more sound proximity in games is so, so cool. And yeah.
Right now, at this very moment, how many writing ideas have you got stored in your notes app on your phone?
Oh. Okay, wait, hold on. Let me grab my phone. It's across the room. I will grab it. Let's... Oh, jeez. Okay. How many ideas do I have for games on my phone right now? Oh my gosh, the things you're finding out about, I don't remember how many things I talk about online. So when you even brought up the singing thing, I was like, how does he know about singing? But when we talked about it, I was like, wait, that makes so much sense. Okay, let me see. How many game ideas? Let's see if I'm able to, ooh, there we go. Okay. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28 right now.
That is so many.
Yeah, so many. I think, you know, I think any writer or even just any artist, I think even any game dev can tell you, like, taking inspiration from what's around you is, it's always great to have something to write down ideas, whether that's like any sort of idea from things you see and people you meet and stuff like that. So I have a big old writing note that is, sometimes it's just like, this is something I want to write at some point, but some of it is very much like, this is a game I want to make. So, yeah, 28. I've never counted them before, so that's kind of crazy.
So I fully agree. I don't do a lot of writing. I used to do more, but definitely it's the one that you hear it all the time, and it's true. If inspiration strikes, you have to write it down because you will forget it.
Yeah.
And for me, the place inspiration strikes the most is when I'm driving. And I drive half an hour to and from work every day. And it's funny, like, one of my favorite things I've written in the past, I don't even know how long, it was like 4 or 5 years ago at this point, I wrote a poem about my cat, calling him a hobbit because he eats all the time.
Oh my God, I love that.
And I was like, it just, you know, I'm driving and I can't look at my phone while I'm driving. So I'm like repeating it to myself. I'm like getting a one line in and I'm like, okay, don't forget that line. And then the next line, I'm like, okay. And then I get to work and I'm like, I gotta write it down right now.
Yeah. Oh my God, I feel that. But for me, it's like almost sometimes with, have you ever had a dream, like a very vivid dream? And you're like, wait, I gotta write this down because actually this is a good idea. And so you write it down on your phone and then you go back to sleep and then you wake up and you read it and you're like, what did that even mean? Like, I don't know.
Right, yeah. Oh, there's like a Seinfeld episode about that.
Oh, is there?
Yeah, there really is.
Oh my god, I should look at that. But yeah, it's I totally understand 100%. You're like, the most unopportune moments is also when you get the best ideas. It's like, I don't even have like my phone here or my notepad or anything. Or yeah, obviously when you're driving, definitely don't like write and drive.
Right.
but yeah, like repeating that in your head till you can get it onto some sort of piece of paper or notes app or whatever. Yeah, been there, done that. But I love that. I love your cat hobbit poem. I'll need to find it.
I will send it to you. I totally have it somewhere. I'm quite proud of it. I think it's pretty good.
Oh my god. Please. I want to read it.
I've got a couple more lines of questioning here, and then I'll let you go. I've already kept you longer than I said I would.
Oh, that's okay. No worries.
You are a volunteer blogger for women-led games. And this is where the journalism thing comes in. You took it in high school. Is this, have you done outside of high school, like, is this your first journalism endeavor, or have you done other stuff?
Yeah, I would say this is probably outside of high school, like, my journalism endeavor has been, working with women-led games. Yeah, this is it. I wish there was more. I guess a little bit in college when I don't know if this counts, but I was in an honor society and I was the social media chair. So I had to document all the events we went to, take pictures and video and post about the things we were doing and getting people to come out and see us and things like that. So I guess there was a little bit in college, but like mostly high school. And then now as a volunteer blogger for women-led games as well.
Yeah, and you do, I mean, you basically do what I do, except you're in text format. It's interviews. And personally, like, I actually did work in radio news for 7 years. And I'm not good at it. Like, I'm very unconfrontational, and I get very anxious about things. So, am I going to misquote someone or whatever? So I got to the point where I was like, you know what, if I just interview someone and put the interview out, like, yeah. I didn't screw up anything. but yeah, do you have a favorite interview that you've done so far? Is it different than you've expected? Or, let you know, how's it been?
Yeah. I think, I mean, all the people I have met for the blog have been amazing. And they've all been so supportive. And just hearing about their stories and advice have been so, so cool. I think if I had to pick, like, one... I guess the most recent one, which isn't quite recent. So this is where I say I understand about you saying it's what it was supposed to be weekly and now it's a little bit more than a month. I'm the same when it comes to Women Like Games blog. My favorite interview is with Abby Howard, who was one of the creators of Slay the Princess, which has become like one of my favorite games. Highly suggest if you guys haven't checked it out before. And just talking to Abby about like just the creation of the game and just like my personal this wasn't in the blog post, but she also asked me like what route I went down in the game too, and that was really cool because I got to be like, oh yeah, this is what I did, and she's like, oh, so you went down this route, and I was like, what does that mean? Like, what do you mean? Because it's a very much a game that you have to like play over and over 100%. And so it was just really, really cool to talk to her about a game that I think is so, so fun. But everyone I've met has been amazing. Charmaine, who is the mastermind behind Women-Led Games, is just like, you guys need to check out the work she's doing because she's the one who's really pushing everything when it comes to women-led games. I, like, as I was saying, like, I've been kind of away for a little bit because I went to GDC and then the patch for Guiding Light was like taking all my attention. So I'm going to come back to blogging very, very soon. But yeah, that's probably my favorite one.
Cool. And then the last thing I'll ask about your production philosophy. Three pillars. You've got people first mentality, sturdy, efficient conversations, and then let's assume I don't know what I'm talking about here, because I don't. and a non-Newtonian fluid scheduling system. What does that mean?
Yeah, I'll start with that last one because that's always the one I get questions about. Non-Newtonian fluid is basically something that is both liquid and solid at the same time. So if anyone remembers if they engaged in this in elementary school, I know I did, but oobleck, the most fun word to say in the world, oobleck, is both solid and liquid at the same time. You might have made it in elementary school or middle school. It basically, in regards to a scheduling system, it's trying to be both something that is very malleable, can change if anything, like a roadblock or a bottleneck comes up, but is solid in that it is able to get to the deadline we have set. So this obviously is a perfect scenario. Not every production is going to work this way. This, my three pillars are something that I try to incorporate into all the game development work I do, but ultimately, like, it's something that is I'm building over time. I continuously fix and change this page of my website, this philosophy. And it's something I can refer to when I'm talking to other producers or studios, things like that, but it's not foolproof. It's a production in my brain should be something that's shaped by the game developers and just how we all function together and should be constantly evolving to meet people's needs. But so this non-Newtonian fluid scheduling system is great for like small teams and indie teams. Because it's something where we'll create milestones with extra time at the end with like nothing there. Like it's just like we'll have a deadline set and then we'll have like maybe a week in advance. We'll be like, this is when the game should be done. But again, obviously, if there's bottlenecks, if there's roadblocks, if we cut into time, we're still not missing the deadline because we've created that extra space. So that's that wiggle room. Yeah, so this just works really good for game jams and things like that. So, yeah, I just couldn't stop thinking of oobleck when I was thinking of what to name this pillar. And then I was like, what is oobleck? Because I don't want to call it oobleck scheduling system.
Right.
So I was like, what is it? And it's a non-Newtonian fluid. I don't know if you wanted to hear about the other pillars or if you just wanted to talk about that.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I guess I'm curious how you landed on those pillars and where you think it leads as far as production.
Yeah. This philosophy idea was suggested to me by a game developer friend of mine. And I loved it. And I was like, I want to be able to, as I said before, just build upon it with every producer I meet, with every, all the people I work with, the games I make, things like that. And so I found that these were the three that spoke to me the most. So the people first mentality, I think it clues to back what I said a little bit ago, which is like people and game developers shape the production. And so with my people first mentality, it's like there's people who make the games and they need to be there. We all need to be there for the successes and the failures. So I try to take like a very holistic way of checking in with people. It's not just like, how are you doing on this task? Like, period. It's like, how are you doing? How are you feeling? Like, this is like a morale check as well. I think any producer can tell you like production is both like, it's partly just making sure everything is going and gets going and the tasks are getting done, but it's also like how are we keeping the morale up? Kristen Halloran said it best. It's just like meeting people where they're at and working with them. And then the sturdy, efficient conversations is just kind of, it's a bit more on the technical side of how I run things. So I'm very much an agenda person. I'm like, I need to write down all the things we're going to talk about and let everyone know in advance. And so we can like keep things on track. I'm an anxious person when it comes to talking with people sometimes, so just trying to know what's going on is always appreciative, and I'm sure anyone else can like appreciate getting a little heads up. And communication is so big, like such a major part of production in general, but just like also like the way I run my production, like asking questions constantly from myself, but also never putting people down for asking them in return or feeling like intimidated. And being thorough is so important. Like trying to get as much details out there, but as concise as possible. It's something that I'm continually working on. As we can tell, I'm a bit of a rambler. but even with all this, there miscommunications will happen no matter what. And that's just the part and parcel of working in production. But it's just, you know, yes anding, rolling with those punches. If anyone does improv, that's kind of a big thing, is if something happens, we're gonna, yes, that happened, and what are we going to do next? How are we going to work through it, work around it, go over it, and learn for next time? And there are so many producers like Kristen Halloran, who I mentioned, but Jen Sandercock, Henrik, Nyberg, Rebecca Bassel, Abby Sherlock, and Aaron Thibault. They're all producers that inspired me for this philosophy.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah.
So where can people check out? Where can listeners learn more about Sophie Galley?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, my Twitter is kind of inactive. I'm going to try to be more active on there. I get kind of burnt out from social media quickly, but I'm at Sofaloaf, at Sof_A_Loaf_. And on Twitter, and then on LinkedIn, I'm just Sophie Galley. What else? I've got Blue Sky, but again, I'm probably on there the least. Also, Sofaloaf on Blue Sky is just without the underscores. Please reach out. I'd love to talk to people, learn about the work you're doing, work with you on things, and yeah.
Sophie Galley, thank you so much.
Thank you, Mark. This was so, so cool. Again, I'm such a rambler, so apologies, but this was super fun.